Welcome to Dudes on Movies, a podcast where dudes talk about movies. I'm your dude, Scott.
I'm your dude, Dave.
And today we're discussing 1996's The Crucible, directed by Nicholas Heitner and starring Winona Ryder and Daniel Day-Lewis. But before we do that, let's talk about what we've been watching. Dave, what have you been watching?
I recently rewatched An American in Paris, and it turned out to be a musical that my wife really liked.
Oh.
You know, I was pleasantly surprised.
Is she not
that.
A fan? I thought she enjoyed musicals.
She shares your feelings about the
genre. Oh, wow.
Yeah. But this movie broke through and she really enjoyed herself.
Cool.
And for those who don't know, this is a film from 1951 where Gene Kelly romances Leslie Caron, and it's full of all the kind of choreography that they were both famous for. And it was shot on location in Paris. It's got some of the best photography and costuming you've ever seen. It's what we know of as, like, the movies, you know?
Yeah.
It's classic Hollywood. And so please give it a watch if you haven't seen it. It's great.
All right. Or don't, because it's a musical, Dave.
Don't listen to Scott. this is something you got to see.
Okay.
Right.
I'll have to watch it, too, actually.
Thank you.
I need to check it out. It's classic.
It'll be, like, in your, Oscar-nominated. I know you're on your quest.
I know.
Still.
I know it's in there. Yes. So I've got to get to it.
Yes.
There's plenty of those in there.
Right.
You know? And just because they're musical doesn't mean they're a bad movie. They all have got pretty good stories usually. So
yes.
Yeah, I'll get over it.
Right.
One of these days. I watched another classic film from 1933, Dave. It was Son of Kong.
Oh, wow.
The sequel of King Kong.
Never saw that.
Came out the same year. They were like, we got some money coming in from this giant ape. We're making a sequel.
Jeez, man.
And Robert Armstrong reprises his role as, I think, Carl Denham's his name.
Yeah.
He's the guy who brought Kong back to New York City. It takes place like 6 months later.
Okay.
And he's being sued left and right by the county,
sure.
The state, you know, every company that was damaged.
Yes.
You know, left and right. So he has to get out of town so he doesn't get sued. And lo and behold, he winds up back at the island. But I think the circumstances of him getting there and the people who tag along, it happens in a way that is unexpected.
Okay.
And it's not just a retread of exactly what happened in the first movie.
Right.
It's got some great, like, mini Kong, because it's the son of Kong in it. He's, like, maybe 15 foot tall instead of 50.
All right.
You get him fighting dinosaurs and stuff. It's actually a pretty good movie, and it's only about 70 minutes long. So I would say everyone should check it out if they're a fan of the first King Kong. The ending, though, is kind of out of nowhere and happens all of a sudden, and it's just nonsense crap that just happens for no reason. I won't spoil it in case you want to watch it.
Okay.
But the last couple minutes of this movie, you're like, what? What? Why? How did this happen? What?
Well, the fact that it came out like the same year as the original shows that like maybe they were rushing things a bit, so it's understandable that the ending would kind of come apart.
Maybe, but it was like they could have explained it a little better.
Yes.
I don't know why this is happening.
Right.
But Son of Kong, everybody, check it out.
Right.
All right, Dave, now let's talk about The Crucible. Why don't you give everyone a synopsis?
Yes. So this is the film version of one of Arthur Miller's most famous plays, and it looks at the Salem witch trials, where a group of children in the Massachusetts colony in the 17th century accused several townspeople of witchcraft, and many were executed as a result. But even though the setting and the events are based on a true story, the actual play was inspired by the actions of the House Un-American Activities Committee in 1952. And throughout our discussion of the movie, we will have probably a lot to say about the psychology of witch hunts and overall mob panic. So let's get started.
I didn't draw the connection to HUAC, but
did
yeah,
you? Oh.
Yeah, dude, it's definitely there.
Yes, absolutely. Arthur Miller was close friends with Elia Kazan, and they'd worked together in the theater, and Miller was first inspired to write the play after Kazan's testimony in front of the HUAC.
Okay.
Kazan had initially refused to name names, but the committee eventually pressured and threatened him enough that he gave up 8 people. And this whole affair ended Miller's and Kazan's friendship, and the play was Miller's response to everything that was happening.
Right.
And of course, it would eventually land him in front of the committee.
Yeah.
When he was called before the HUAC himself, he refused to name names, and he was given jail time and was blacklisted. He was married to Marilyn Monroe at the time, and she even like put herself at risk by just showing up to support him at
yeah.
the committee. Just a terrible time, everybody.
I was just about to say, what a time to be alive,
yes,
Dave.
Yes, it just sucked. he was denied a passport by the HUAC, so he couldn't go to the London premiere.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that was the least of the problems that he faced. I mean, along with being blacklisted and given jail time.
Right. Yeah. And everybody, this, if you like this, some more's coming. I'll tell you.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So
that's
stay
right.
tuned. All right. So the movie kicks off with a group of women from the village in Salem, Massachusetts.
Yep.
Waking up in the middle of the night and running out into the woods to dance and laugh and sing. And they're all running out there. There's about a dozen of them, right?
Yeah.
And Winona Ryder is one of them. She plays Abigail. She's like one of the leads in the film. And they're all around this little fire with a cauldron. It looks like a witch's cauldron, doesn't
it? Yes, it does.
And we all nowadays, when you hear the word Salem, you're like, okay, that's the witch trials and stuff. It's just kind of synonymous with witchcraft now. So when you see this, you're like, okay, so are they actually performing witchcraft out here? They're actually casting charms and stuff?
Right.
And they all do. They all bring an item to like throw into this cauldron and cast a love spell on some man from the village.
Yes. Had you read the play previously?
No.
Okay.
No, I have not.
Okay.
What, am I missing something vital from the play?
No, it's just that, like, I was just curious. I had read the play before I'd seen the film, and I'd seen a performance of it, like, I'd heard a performance of it, like a radio play.
Yeah.
And it was shortly after high school, and I really wanted to be in a performance of the play. The opportunity never presented itself, unfortunately, but I always, like, dreamed of, like, being in this...
Which role would you have loved?
I wanted to play John Proctor, of course.
Of course, you wanted to be Daniel Day-Lewis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I wanted to be, a sexy horseman.
Yes.
But, you know, it just wasn't in the cards. What can you do?
We can't all be Daniel Day-Lewis, Dave.
That's right.
But, man.
The reason I brought up the play, though, is because, like... this sequence, most of the more explicit elements we see in the film could only be implied in the original play. And this opening sequence where the girls dance in the forest was something Arthur Miller had always wanted to portray if he could ever make a movie. You know, because the play came out in 1953, and you know, you just couldn't show those kinds of things on Broadway at the time. And so, like, all of the stuff that they, like, it happened in the play, but they just talk about it.
Okay,
This is actually, we're doing a film, so we need to open things up.
You see it happening, and they're all having a really good time, and no one's fearful or anything.
Right.
And everyone's kind of making play out of it, in a way, but Winona Ryder's taking it very seriously.
Yes.
She actually brought a chicken to sacrifice, and she ultimately, like, kills it and drinks its blood.
Yes.
And everyone else is like, holy shit. Half of them are freaked out. The other half are just kind of in shock, but, like, there for it, you know? Like, because they're all like, hell yeah, we're going to get our man.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because they all give something to the cauldron, and they call out a name. And, like, Abigail doesn't say anything at first, but then she whispers something to Tituba.
Yeah.
She is the slave woman from Barbados who is, like, kind of, they've learned witchcraft from her. And she's like leading everything. And Tituba says to Abigail, you know, like, no, that is a bad idea.
Yes.
You know, and the other girls know that Abigail wants John Proctor. They've all, like, cast a spell for a boy in the village that was, like, presumably their age. You know.
Yeah. And probably available.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
Not unmarried. Unmarried man with children.
Right. Right. But they know that, like, Abby lusts after this man. And boy, when she oh man. Like, we talked about this ritual, how it looks like a good time and we're all dancing in the forest and everything.
Yeah.
Apart from the animal cruelty, when Abigail, like, slams that chicken across I'm just like, oh, God,
oh yeah.
That's just terrible. And then she emerges from the fracas with, like, blood all over her face. It's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a great way to open this movie. It really kickstarts it.
It does. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Right.
And we don't know what she said. We don't know what she said at all.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she said John Proctor, or maybe she actually said she wanted what we come to find out. We think she wanted Joan Allen's character to die.
Yes.
That way she could get John Proctor. So I don't know if she actually cast the spell to kill Joan Allen, or if she's just trying to get the love spell. I don't know what you think.
I think she said she the reason Tituba reacted the way she did was because she said, "You need to kill Elizabeth Proctor."
I think so too.
Yes,
I think that's
and
what it
the
is.
The killing of the chicken and the drinking of the blood was a big part. Like, hey, look, we're serious now. You know, yeah. Elizabeth has to die so that I can get this man.
And Winona Ryder during all this has, like, I already said she has a different disposition than the other girls yes. that are there. She is so intense in these scenes and almost crazed in yeah. a way. Like she has been possessed by the devil.
I know,
almost.
I know. I know.
She is seeing the devil.
She's like, a scary kid.
Yeah. She just knows what she wants and she's going to take it no matter what.
Yep.
Which is how everything in this movie happens is
Dude,
because of her.
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, Abigail is a teenage girl whose parents were murdered. I don't think she's innocent, like you said. And she's old enough to know the difference between right and wrong, particularly yeah. when she's being this willful about everything. But
because she's not a child. She's like at least 18
She's
years
at least
old.
18 years old.
Because yeah. that's addressed.
Right. Even though she is a bad person, John Proctor is also very much at fault for everything that transpires in this movie.
Yes.
He doesn't deserve to be hanged for it. But his actions do set a lot of this in motion.
It's true.
You know, and as bad as Abigail is, I remember the first time I saw or I read the play and saw the performance of it, I had the same reaction. I was just like, I thought Abigail is just like, I mean, just like Elizabeth reacts. You know, she must be ripped from the world. That girl is just homemade sin, mm-hmm. you know? And then I realized, I was like, well, wait a minute, though. We're kind of letting John Proctor off the hook here. And I know I always yeah. do this in these stories, but like, I just can't help it. Like,
no.
As the years have gone on, I've realized that like,
he's
what
not
he
innocent.
Did. Exactly.
No, he...
Yeah.
He knows her, as he says yes. later. I have known her, Dude, is what he tells people later.
And for it to be like actually in the court record, I have known her, sir.
I love it. It's yes. so good. I was about to say it's the perfect Christian way of saying you cheated on your wife
yes.
with this harlot.
Yes, man. And dude, no one pops a consonant like Paul Scofield when
dude.
He says, "And she knew her for a harlot." I mean, I've never seen
yes.
a T, you know, like pronounced so well.
He's excellent in this movie. He plays Judge
Danforth.
Danforth, yes. yes. And he is a presence in yeah. this film.
Dude, I mean, Paul Scofield, one of the world's greatest actors.
Oh, yeah. yeah. And he's excellent. And I think the entire cast is wonderful.
Dude, like, I know.
I especially love Karen Graves, who plays Mary.
She's amazing.
She, like, was kind of just the side character and just
yes.
all of a sudden, near the end of the film, has just... prominence
I know
a lot of it and she is excellent. She goes toe to toe with Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, it is a phenomenal performance,
screaming in his face.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
and just yeah, full on. I mean, dude, and I think Mary Warren, yeah, her character, like, she's not as helpless as Tituba, but she's still a victim. And
right.
like, the only way for her to join, the only way out for her is to do what she does, you know.
Yeah.
In the end, yeah, we'll get to it, but yeah, I'm glad you brought up Karen Graves.
Oh,
she's
man
awesome.
This movie is awesome, everybody.
Awesome,
I'd never
dude.
Seen
oh,
it, Dave.
I'm so, so glad to hear you say that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and what happens is they get interrupted because Bruce Davidson comes down
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Reverend Paris.
Reverend Paris. He's Abigail's uncle.
Yes.
And he's also like the reverend of the church and the town and stuff. So he's a very high up man in society here.
Yes.
Very important man. And he sees this and stops it from happening. And we get a scene of... He's talking to Winona Ryder, like, hey, why are you guys out here doing this? You know I'm the reverend, right? You know how this will look for me
yeah.
if the word gets out. And he kind of doesn't say anything about it.
Right.
So that's not a good look either, dude. Like, you're trying to cover for yourself?
Reverend Paris, like, every time John Proctor says anything that it's against the court, you know, whatever,
yeah.
like, yeah, he says that. He says something about, you know, that there's a faction that in this community that's sworn to drive me from my pulpit, you know. And since day one, that's been the case. And it's like,
right.
He's a sniveling little wormy bastard. I'm not a preaching farmer with a book under my arm. I'm a graduate of Harvard College. Fuck off, dude.
Yeah, dude.
Who gives a shit?
No wonder he wants all the money and the gold.
Yes, like, yes.
Yeah, those tithings are going to a good cause, aren't they?
Of course,
you know?
Of course. And he wanted the deed to the house they lend him.
Yeah,
you know the so the parsonage is now his. Don't dude, that's not how it works. The
yeah.
house belongs to the church.
Yeah. So on top of all this, he doesn't want his family's name to be involved with witchcraft.
you know, understandable, I guess, but like,
yeah,
he wants to cover it. He wants to squash this.
Yes, he does.
You know?
Yeah.
Because like he says it himself, like if my house is seen to, be part of some obscene practice, you know, it'll be death for me.
Right.
Yeah.
And the word kind of gets out because there's some younger children who have been kind of comatose.
Yes.
And they're blaming it on the devil and that, there's people in town who are doing witchcraft.
Right.
They don't know who yet, but it's happening.
And including his daughter, his daughter, Betty. Yes. Yeah. She's like, just in her bed. She won't move. She can't wake up. Abigail tries to tell him it's only sport, and he slaps her on the face and says, "Do you call this sport?" She cannot wake. It's a really intense moment where I was like, I felt a little bad for Winona Ryder because like he really slaps the shit out of her.
When she got hit, I was like,
yes.
Dude, that looked like a real slap.
Full like, on, like, yeah.
I don't know if it was actually, if he pulled it a little bit, he probably did. But, I mean, there was definitely a connection there with this hit.
Have you ever been slapped for dramatic purposes?
Yes, of course. I used to backyard wrestle.
Okay, yes. That's right.
I've been pile-drivered through a ladder for dramatic purposes.
That's true. You've been suplexed before. yeah, what was I thinking?
I've been hit in the head with a folding chair. It's
that's
fun.
Right. You took a rutabaga to the face at one point, if I recall.
Yes, and soda cans.
Yes. One time someone slapped me during a play, and like... Yeah. It hurt really bad.
Yeah.
You know, and we had to do it multiple times while we were rehearsing, you know, and which was probably unnecessary, but like, you know, everybody at that age, they want so badly to like show the teacher that they've got what it takes.
Right. I'm a method actor.
Exactly.
Look at this.
Yes. Yes. I've studied on to the best. I'm Stella Adler. And it's like, no, you're not, dude. You know, you're in high school still, but like they've got to. Oh man, it sucks. And I just remember, like, you know, in this scene when Winona Ryder takes that slap, I just hope every time it happens in a movie, I hope it's on the first take and they just like, okay, print it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They better have.
Right.
Because that one hurt.
Yes.
And this is all within the first few minutes of the movie.
I know.
Like, to the movie's credit, we're right into a witch hunt.
Yep.
Like, we're not playing games.
Nope.
We're not investigating. We're like, right. This is happening right now and the shit has hit the fan. Yes. I love that.
I know.
So happy.
Yeah, you're right. Because in the first 15 minutes, like Paris gathers all the townsfolk to the meeting house.
Yeah.
And he announces that he's called for John Hale, the Reverend Hale from Beverly.
Yeah, played by Rob Campbell.
Yep. I think we mentioned him on the Hedwig and the Angry Inch episode. Like, Rob Campbell has had a weird career where he's like always almost exclusively done stage work, except for this movie, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, where he's the bassist in the Angry Inch. And like, he has a small part as a cop in Boys Don't Cry. But like, the rest of the time he's been, you know, just doing like, you know, theater work.
He literally tells the congregation, "Hey, Reverend Hale is coming to investigate all these witchcraft allegations. We're going to get to the bottom of this." He says, "We're going to drive the devil out."
Yes. Yes. He may well find signs of Lucifer. And if so, you know, we will drive him out. And, and like, I Reverend Hale is another of the characters that I find really interesting, you know, because he's very
weird. Me
too. Yeah. He has the most interesting arc in the movie.
I agree.
Think. Yeah. Because before he arrives, Paris, like, as you said, he tells the congregation that when the woman in Beverly was accused, Hale examined her and cleared her of the charges. So we know going in, at least, that he thankfully doesn't just condemn everyone who's accused.
Right.
But throughout the story, he becomes increasingly convinced that the girls are, you know, are lying. And he understands the consequences of all this is death for innocent people.
Right, because he realizes what is happening.
Yes.
And no one else is saying anything about it. Right. And thank God he is the kind of person who's not just going to roll over and let that happen.
Yes.
Especially when there's lives at stake.
Absolutely.
And he knows it.
Right.
And he does, by the end of the film, he's done almost everything he can to stop this from happening.
Yes. Yes,
which,
he does.
Which I really love. Like you said, his arc is amazing.
Right.
Because he goes from kind of almost pompous in ways.
Yes.
And then he almost becomes on the side of, you know, prosecuting everybody at times, but then he's also skeptical.
Yeah.
So he's going up and down, all over, back and forth, and lands in a place I didn't expect. I thought it would just be, a pure witch hunt where everyone's just all in. Let's get him.
Yeah, right.
But no, he's the voice of reason.
Yeah, there's one authority figure who is like holding out, you know, who wants to know the actual truth, who's seeking the truth.
There's one point near the end where Abigail's trying to lay another blame on his wife because she doesn't like that this guy is not listening to everyone.
Yes.
And he thinks everyone's lying. So she wants him to pay. And then
Danforth
says, well, he's a reverend. His wife couldn't be the devil. You know, that's impossible.
Man, that's a really significant moment because it says so much about Danforth, you know, and well, you realize, first of all, of course, that it's always in his power of who lives or dies.
Yeah, he can do whatever he wants.
Right. And that he actually believes that the wife of a minister could never be turned. Like, he believes it.
Yeah, right.
You know, and he is the law. You know,
this man has the worst logic.
I mean, it's
in
it's
one
so...
scene. He explains how you have to trust the testimony of the witchcraft victim.
Yeah,
because witchcraft is invisible and you can't get evidence because it's invisible. And the only people who know it happened are the witch and the victim. But the witch is going to lie. So you have to believe the victim. What kind of jump around logic is this crap?
I know. It's
this
like...
is. This is the most powerful man in the region.
Yeah, yeah. He's an absolute sovereign who can say and do whatever. He can put you to death, put you to the sword if he wants. And this is his mind. This is how his mind works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude.
I know. It's really frightening.
It's scary because that's how it's been for a long time throughout history.
I mean,
people just in positions of power kind of just do whatever they want and they can say whatever they want to explain it. And unfortunately, because education was so barred off from everyone, they just believed what they said.
This man has more education than I do, so he must be correct.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's in power, of course, so I have to bend the knee.
Yeah.
You know, I have no choice in the matter. And the Puritans in general, I've probably said this multiple times on this show, but like, it's always troubling to me, and it will always trouble me, that these people fled England seeking religious freedom, and their perverse idea of freedom is this, the most oppressive Christianity they could muster. You know, we saw it in The Witch, we saw it in this, like, it's been documented in 100 other places in like all of Hawthorne's novels, you know, like,
yeah,
what were you trying to escape? I mean, you know,
right?
And how is, when you got to this new paradise, did you decide that you were going to like treat people this way? You know, it's really pretty shocking.
I can't remember his name, but it was like the governor of Pennsylvania when the colony was formed.
Okay.
He did have a community that was like the most open community ever, like since like ancient Greece and shit.
Like
in the states or the colonies at the time, like you could go there and practice whatever you wanted without prosecution.
Okay.
It was insane. I can't remember the guy's name. I feel bad not remembering.
But
like it didn't last forever, obviously.
Yeah.
But like
it almost never does.
That's where you wanted to go if you didn't want to be messed with.
Yes.
But, you know, traveling from anywhere to Pennsylvania back then was a huge task.
It was a voyage.
Traveling anywhere would take you months, a year, you know, like forever.
Yes. A 20-mile like ride through the countryside might mean death.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Oh, man. Like, if you came over here to record a podcast, you could die.
Yes, of course. Exactly.
Podcasting was very dangerous in the 17th century, Dave. And there's a great scene here, too, when Abigail is, like, shaking Betty, like, wake up, stop doing this, stop playing it around, you're getting us in trouble.
Yes.
And she does wake up, and she kind of freaks out, and is going to try to jump out the window, and all the girls are up here, all the ones who were in the woods, and Abigail threatens them all. She's like, if you say anything, I'll fucking kill you. Like, she says, like, I will grab, like, a pointed edge and bring it down on you. Like, all this old-timey language that is just wonderful. And, like, these girls are just, like, they're scared to death of Abigail.
I will come to you in the black of some terrible night with a pointy reckoning that will shudder you.
A pointy reckoning.
Amazing.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it. And it's with the same intensity she had during the ritual. You
yeah.
know, she is... These... I was afraid of her. I'd be like, I'm not going... I'm... Yes. Yes. I will do what you say.
Exactly.
Please don't reckon me.
I hear that's right. That's right, dude. You fucking crazy maniac.
Exactly. Yeah, but like, it's great to establish everything that happens from here on forward.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine these girls had some kind of respect. They might have looked up to Abigail beforehand.
Yeah, she's probably like the ringleader,
yeah. you know. But now they are just under her control.
Right, right.
They'll do whatever she says because they yes. out of fear.
And that's key because, like, what comes next is, like, of course, very significant. I mean, because... And so Reverend Hale starts his investigation by, like, sitting all the girls down and he's, you know, asking very pointed questions about what they've been getting up to.
Mm-hmm.
And Paris, like, kind of chimes in. And he's like, Mr. Hale. And he's like, well, Mr. Paris, you know, what do you got to say? And he tells him, you know, that okay, they were dancing in the forest. And
yeah.
Reverend Hale's like, what, you permit dancing? And he's like, well, no, it was a secret, you know? And
he's like backpedaling, yes. like, oh, wait, no, wait,
yeah, exactly.
Don't take my golden candlestick, please.
And I love, too, that like Hale knows all the trappings of what they were up to. He's like, you yeah. know, tell me, child, was there a fire? You know?
And, yeah.
And he like, no, he can picture it exactly. He's yep. seen all this before. Mm-hmm. He knows that like, and I remember one of the girls, I can't remember which girl it was, but like in the scene you mentioned earlier where Abby was like, you know, threatening them.
Uh-huh,
all,
yeah.
One, I think it was Mary Warren said, witchery's a hanging error. You'll only get whipped for conjuring the boys and the dancing. You know, so she's trying to get everybody to, like, admit
right.
it.
Let's just admit it.
Exactly.
We'll be fine.
Yes.
You know, we'll live.
But I love that that's policy in the village. Everyone knows it in Massachusetts. Conjuring boys and dancing, that's you get whipped. Like, that's written somewhere, which is just so fucking insane.
Doesn't Paul Scofield know this? Come on.
Yes, right. But yeah, and it leads to then, like, they blame Tituba.
Yes.
Charlene Woodard as Tituba. She's awesome in the movie as well. And she's a victim in every way because, of course, it's 1692 and she has no human rights.
Yes.
And they roust her out of her living quarters and Paris starts to whip her as they interrogate her about the rituals.
Yep.
And like Abigail, this is when she really starts to get ugly.
Ugh.
She starts making all these accusations. She says that like, you know, Tituba like puts spells on her to where she like comes, like walks through the house nude and like she laughs at prayers and
yeah.
like all these things that, you know, Abby actually has done, but like she is claiming that Tituba
right, yeah.
like conjured her to do it.
Yes.
And man, it's a scary scene. And like they bring Tituba up to the Paris house to like wake Betty up. And Reverend Hale is like trying to encourage her now. And he's being
right.
very, you know, he's being kind to her, but also being very patronizing,
right.
of course.
Like saying, hey, you can turn around. Come
yes.
to me. Come back to the light. Come to Jesus
yes.
and he'll accept you.
Right.
Like you have to open your heart to him. Leave the devil behind.
And he uses like Danforth's twisted logic about like, you know, the devil could never overcome a minister. You do know that, right?
Right. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, yes, sir, I do. You know, it's like, yes. Well, then face God and speak utterly. You know,
it's so insane, dude. Like, because they're basically torturing her, right?
Yeah.
She's in Guantanamo Bay.
Yes, because the whole village is in this room.
They're there. They're whipping her. They're yes. pressuring her. They're trying to make her crack.
Right.
So she eventually does, and she says what they want to hear. She
yeah,
starts
she,
pointing fingers to other people.
Right.
You know?
She blames, like, some... She says that, like... Because they're trying to get her to say, like... You know, was there other people when the devil came to you?
Yeah.
And so she names like these homeless women.
Yeah.
And at one point she even like stands up to Reverend Paris, which is a great moment. Because like she says that the devil tried to get me to kill you, and he's like, oh, kill me, and he starts backpedaling.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh yeah, you know. She gets right up in his face and like says, you know, everything the devil said to her and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she made this deal with him, and like, you know, he's gonna give me a new dress, and he's gonna fly me back to Barbados, and I said no, I don't hate Reverend Paris, you know. And,
right.
And like the whole town is like shuttered. You know, they're just kind of like looking at her as she makes this speech.
Right.
But her fate was sealed, you know, the second Abigail,
right,
named her name. The way she stares in disbelief at the girls as they run with the story, you know, like there's that shot of her, like when Abigail and the other girls start saying, you know, oh, I saw Goody Osborne with the devil. I saw so-and-so with the devil.
Yep.
Like Tituba is just like looking at them, you know, like not shaking her head, but you know, she's thinking they're lying. I could die. You know, I guess she's not going to be sentenced to death because she admitted to it, but she's going to serve quite a lot of time in this prison.
Yep.
It's a horrible and sad affair, but it's now on.
Yeah. And the way that they all jump on this bandwagon, all the girls, you know, it's shocking to see this, like that. This is what happens nowadays too. I mean, it's human nature to do this, especially when there's self-preservation involved.
Yeah,
they're gonna do whatever they can.
Yes,
not only are they afraid of like Abigail, what she'll do, but like they're afraid of the punishment they'll receive, because now they're in a lie. Like they're in too deep now.
Yeah,
they're gonna be even in worse trouble.
Right,
probably still aren't gonna die just for doing this. But right. You know. They don't know that. They could hang. They could be accused of witchcraft, too.
Yes.
Like they could be involved in all that. And, God, it's an excellent scene.
It is.
Like the whole movie is just filled with excellent scenes.
Right.
I think all the acting, top to bottom, is dynamite acting. And there's a great scene, I think it's right before this, with Abigail and John Proctor.
We have to talk about that. Yeah, it's
on
important.
The side of the building.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, man. Yes. And they talk to each other. Like, apparently she was like the housemaid for John Proctor and his wife.
Yes.
But she was dismissed, and it's because they had an affair.
Yeah.
And I feel the chemistry when they're talking together. It's on thick.
I mean,
it's like, dude, look at these people.
I know. Like, it's two of the most attractive people on earth.
Yes.
Know?
Yes.
And like, they're really close to each other. And yeah, it's like, it's,
you can see why they had this affair, because if that's the chemistry that was existing, like
she says something about like, you know, like you used to sweat like a stallion whenever I'd walk into the room. I was like, oh
yeah,
shit.
I'm like, you know, dude, yeah. Yeah. A big sexy stallion. Yeah, exactly. Dude, he's got that like shoulder length hair.
Yes.
And the, like the beard.
Yeah.
The short beard.
Yeah, he's ready to go. Dude.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh, looking good. The shirt's unbuttoned a little bit. Yeah.
You see like the sinews of his neck. Like he's got like the pulsating vein right
yes.
there.
You can tell this guy's fit.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. Yes. And it's also too like,
and he's dirty, but it's like a sexy dirty.
Of course. he's looks like a blue collar hot guy.
Yeah, dude.
You know? And yeah. And the thing is too, it's like at one point after they like, cause she tries to get physical with him.
Yeah.
And you know, he throws her off after about 15 seconds of, you know, like...
She's holding his junk.
Yes. She's full-on clutching him down there.
Yeah.
And he eventually, like, kind of violently, oh, you know, and tries to walk
like,
away.
Stay away from my wife and my family and all this.
But, dude, you just, like I said, maybe not 15 seconds, but it takes a while for him to, like, you know, cast her away.
He let her touch him and she was there for a good 5 seconds at least.
Yes.
And he didn't stop her. And he even tells her like, I've never done anything to invite you to do this.
Right.
And yeah. Yes, you are. You're not like actually laying down the law here.
No. And we said that she's 18 now. I mean, when she was in his service, she was probably less than that.
Probably.
Yeah, it's not about, like, the legality of the relationship, just the fact that, like, he's an older man who seduced a young girl.
Right.
You know, and...
It's kind of like grooming.
Yes, very much so. And, I mean, like, it's revealed, like, in this confrontation that, like, one of the things she says, you know, like, I never understood, you know, like, Salem with their Christian women and covenanted men. So during their time together, John Proctor educated Abigail about, like, religious hypocrisy. Which would have been a very noble thing had he not, you know, like taken advantage of her in the process.
Right.
You know, which is, I mean, that's endemic to like, you know, older teacher pupil relationships, you know, mostly man to woman. Obviously, that's usually how it goes. But he is like essentially like a sexy professor. It's happened a million times.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And he's a very good man, right? Like, I feel like he's a
principled guy.
He's a good person.
Yes.
He's not an evil man.
No,
he's
not
malicious. He's loving and caring. He loves his wife.
Yes.
He had an infidelity.
He made a big mistake.
He regrets it every day of his life.
Yes.
So now he goes back to Joan Allen, like back home, his wife, Goody Proctor.
Yeah,
they call
Goody
her.
Proctor.
I think her name's Elizabeth, but yes. They call her Goody.
Yeah, because it's just a title that like every married woman have, good wife. So-and-so.
Oh, I didn't know that's what it meant.
Yeah, okay. Goody for short.
Okay, so yeah, he goes and tells her about like the day, what's been happening, all the kerfuffle that's going on in the town. And he even says that he was alone with Abigail for a moment. And then Joan Allen's kind of like, well, you didn't tell me you were alone with her. You said she was there.
Uh-huh.
You didn't say you were alone with her. And they get into this excellent argument about what had happened in the past and how they feel about it and how they're trying to move on. And this sucks. And I'm mad at you,
right.
But we're married and I love you. And I would kill you, but I love you. You know? And you lied to me.
Yeah.
You know? It's a wonderful scene.
And, you know, he reacts like forcefully, you know, and he tells her that like, he says, I have not gone from there to there in the last year without, I think, to please you, you know, and he just goes out of his way all the time to like, you know, be as upright as he can.
Right.
And you know, it's still, he says, an everlasting funeral marches around your heart. You know,
yeah,
it's a cold thing to say to somebody.
Yes. And he calls her cold.
Yes, he
this
does.
This is a cold house.
Yes.
Something
yes.
like that. He
right.
says.
Yeah. And you know, she says, look, I have forgiven you. And I, obviously she probably hasn't, not fully.
Yes.
But this is probably the first time she's brought it up in some time because it was the first time it came up in conversation.
Right. They're trying to move past it.
Yes.
So why talk about this?
Right. And the reason he brought it up in the first place was because I guess he confided in Elizabeth that like Abigail told him that the girls were playing around and that this whole act is an act.
Yeah.
You know, and but he doesn't have any proof because it was just the two of them. And that's when, like you said,
yeah,
you know, right. Oh, but you were alone with her, you know?
He says, for but a moment.
Yes. For a moment alone. dude, look. Yeah. Okay. And you also left out the part where you made out with her for 5 seconds.
Yeah, she touched your junk.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ugh. For but a moment, babe. Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah,
man, dude. Yeah.
But it's an excellent,
great scene.
Husband and wife argument.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I think it really sets off the payoff at the end of the movie when they reconcile.
Yes, of course.
Because both of them have done things wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Joan Allen really did that much wrong, but she admits that she has been cold-hearted and standoffish.
Yes.
And that's part of the problem.
Right.
You know, she didn't go sleep with some other dudes, you know, but like
right.
that's a small part of it. Yeah. But anyway, it's a fantastic scene.
Yes.
So now this is when Danforth.
Yes.
Shows up.
Judge Danforth. Yep. Yes.
And he's going to get to the bottom of things.
Right. And I wish I knew the actor's name. I can't believe I don't because I've seen this movie a million times. But one of the other judges is named Hawthorne. And that is the real like relative of Nathaniel
it's,
Hawthorne.
It's Robert Brueller
yes,
is the
right.
actor.
Yes. And he's a real sack of shit, you know, because he's just kind of like he's kind of an ass kiss, you know, and he's really patronizing to everybody. And he's one of my least favorite characters in the movie because he's a type, you know, and I don't mean like he's a bad character. I mean, he's just like a bad person. I don't like him.
Right.
But yeah, he shows up, Paul Scofield as Judge Danforth shows up with George Gaines as Judge Sewell, who's like the number two guy. And they first have they show him the afflicted girls. They're all lined up out in front of the meeting house and they curtsy to him.
Yeah.
And then they have the initial dinner, you know, to welcome him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember during the introductions, he's like Hawthorne is like introducing Danforth and Sewell to everybody, and they're about to walk by and then they stop and come back to introduce him to Thomas Putnam.
Yeah.
You know, Jeffrey Jones's character.
Yeah.
And Putnam is a minor character in the movie, but he represents like so much that's like kind of wrong with just society.
Yeah.
From the start. I mean, he's like American society from the beginning.
Right.
You know, he's got a lot of money courtesy of his parents. So he gets to have influence.
Yeah.
He's married to his wife is played by Frances Conroy, Goodwife Putnam. You know, Frances Conroy has got a face that can play this very sad lady who has lost all of her children except one.
Yeah.
The other one was another child who was, you know, supposedly witched. You know, yeah. during
she one of the just, younger girls exactly. that's not waking up.
Right. Ruth yeah. Putnam is the
their final child.
Yes. Right.
One of eight.
Yes.
That has made it, and they don't know if she's going to survive.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's not a very good guy. After the dinner, that's when the trials begin.
Oh yeah, and the judge starts questioning the girls, and you get it's like a montage, right?
Yeah.
And they're pointing fingers to all these women and other men around town,
right?
Just because they like looked at him the wrong way, or they said something to him.
I know.
Or there's a threat that they could reveal the truth.
Yeah.
They're using this position that they're fortunately in, where they're going to be believed by Danforth.
Yeah.
To get whatever they want.
It's just like, it is the worst example of like just mob mentality and like this sickness that everybody just believes them like fully, you know, yeah. every time they accuse.
They all start behaving the same way in unison
yes.
at once. And most of the time it's led by Abigail. She'll like say, oh, my stomach, and like lean over and start heaving.
Yeah. She instigates it.
And it's much like in Midsommar when all the women start, you know, behaving in unison. And
very
they're all
much
like
so.
Heaving and rocking in unison, moaning
yeah.
Or repeating the same words together. And it's a wonderful performance to trick these judges.
Right. Right.
They get
the job done.
As an audience watching the movie, it's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
And I almost like believe them, like, wow, they do look possessed by the devil
at one point. Like, it's later in the film, but like Abigail acts like she's freezing,
yeah.
you know, and Hawthorne walks over and like feels her head is like, she's cold as ice, Your Honor. And
yes.
So she actually can like, on cue,
right.
you know, like pretend that she's clammy. I mean, it's,
and there's something to be said about that. You can control your bodies in certain ways.
You can, yeah.
If you can get your mental state a certain way,
right.
like you can do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone's capable of that.
No, it's a good thing he went to like the master.
Yeah. You know? Like Abigail's quite despicable.
Right. But yeah. And during the montage, one of the victims is this guy, George Jacobs, the old man with the walking sticks.
Yeah. He's got two walking sticks.
Yes. The guy is like in a bad way, you know?
And one of the girls, is it Mary who accuses him? I can't remember
who it is. It's Ruth. It's okay. Putnam's daughter.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
Yes.
She says he snuck in her window.
Yeah.
And abused her.
Yes.
And he's like, how could I abuse her?
Yes.
I have to walk with two sticks.
He talks exactly like that.
He's like 147 years old in 1600.
Yes, exactly.
Which means he's like 5 times older than anyone else.
This is Methuselah level stuff, dude. I mean, he's this guy is old
this
as shit.
This guy has biblical age.
Yes.
Like, he is... how could he do this? Come on.
And they buy it fully.
They say because the devil gave him power.
You could have sent your spirit.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
Yes. There's a lot of that going on in this movie. Yeah.
I
saw his spirit. They sent her spirit.
It sucks. It just is like, and at one point, like, there's of course racism here at this moment too, because like he's trying to plead his case, and Danforth like Ruth Putnam like whispers something to Danforth, and you don't hear it, but he says, Ruth Putnam has informed me a black man is whispering in your ear right this moment, and the whole crowd goes, oh, and it's
yeah.
like,
oh my gosh,
I mean, and he sits there like bewildered, like, are you what? There's
really?
What?
I don't see him.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, no.
Right. I mean, good Lord. And okay, his life is over. He's going to be put... They're going to hang him now because of this.
I want to see a court nowadays doing this shit. Like,
oh,
I want to see this happen.
Well, dude, you know what? Honestly, it's not quite to the scale and the stakes aren't as high, but tune into Judge Judy. You know, and just look at the kind of bullshit that we've got on TV with that stuff.
Yeah, that's a lot of like their dog crossed into my yard right. and ate my mailbox.
Of course.
Like it's a lot of that bullshit.
It's small claims stuff, but there's no dignity, you know.
There's definitely no dignity right. on Judge Judy
no,
on Fox
exactly.
2.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is no way.
Right. And it is a big circus, the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, but yeah, The word gets out that Abigail wants Joan Allen dead, right?
Yeah. She wants Elizabeth Proctor dead.
Yes. John Proctor isn't happy about this.
Right.
He tells her that he'll end her at one point,
yeah.
which I was like, hell yeah, dude. Yes. When they have such great chemistry in this movie, I don't care if he's braining her.
No.
Like,
I know.
If he's killing her, it's still a great scene because they're together.
Because, like, we only get them, like fully together on screen a handful of times.
Yeah, it's rare.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, because Mary Warren had come home. Mary Warren is now in the care of, she's the new housemaid for the Proctors.
Yes. Yeah.
And she is one of the afflicted girls, so she's carrying on in
yeah.
court during the day. She's supposed to be at home, like, you know, tending the house. But Proctor had told her, you know, not to go. But she went anyway, and she comes home one night and she is like, you know, and they're like, how dare you go to Salem when we forbade you?
Yeah.
And she reveals that, okay. Yeah. Abigail is going to, she mentioned Elizabeth.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah. You know, she's now like a suspect.
Yeah. And she kind of says, well, she didn't just say she's a witch, but she kind of mentioned it and then no one believed it. And
yes.
So, but yeah, the seed is planted.
Of course.
You know, she's a dead woman now.
Right. Right.
But yeah, and this is Karen Graves' character, Mary. And
yeah.
There's a great scene with her and Daniel Day-Lewis. She's like, well, I'm old enough. I don't want to go to bed. He tells her to go to bed.
Yeah.
And he's like, fine, then stay up. And she goes, well, I'm just going to go to bed then.
Yes.
She's afraid of this guy.
Do you wish to sit up? Then sit up. I wish to go to bed. Good night then.
Yes, because he is so pissed off. She's like, I better not. I'm trying to be defiant and stuff, but I'm not dealing with
this guy.
I'm just going to go to bed.
I mean, like, because the first time we saw Daniel Day-Lewis as John Proctor is when Joan Allen is calling to him.
He's out in the field.
He's out in the field with his sons, and he's using that scythe to mow his crops. And, like, he's doing it expertly. Because
yeah.
it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
I'm sure he did it for a year beforehand.
I mean,
you know?
Yes. And there was a moment on the commentary track on the DVD where Nicholas Heitner came off very Hollywood. Because, like, apparently Daniel Day-Lewis helped build the sets. Because he's an expert
I'm not
carpenter.
Surprised.
And, like, Heitner was just so dazzled by this. He goes, it was just amazing. He actually came with his tool belt and he was out there helping the guys. I was like, oh wow, that's some, and because he was like so excited that an actor knows how to do something because he just never would have expected, you know.
I'm sure you can't do that nowadays, right? There's union laws
not.
And everything.
Yeah,
and
yes, and there's all kinds of insurance stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, like yeah, there's no way they would let Daniel Day-Lewis hang the door on the church. You know,
which is great because his character here, John, says that he did all that stuff,
yes,
which
know.
Is funny.
Exactly.
Now that I know he did it in real life, also.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because after this scene, who's the Reverend Hale? Reverend
yeah.
Hale, right? He
yep.
shows up and is like, hey, I've been talking to everyone, trying to investigate, and you guys are next.
Yeah.
You know, I'm here. Talk to you.
This is my favorite scene in the movie.
It's a great scene, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
And he's saying, you know, they've pointed fingers at, you know, your wife and what does he say exactly?
He's there to like bring them some news also of what's going on also in the town with like the other accusers.
I remember the scene now. Yep.
And he says that like Rebecca Nurse was charged, and Rebecca Nurse is this like kindly old woman who is famous throughout the province for like being, you know, a very charitable person. Her and her husband, Francis, they're like the best people.
Yeah.
On earth.
Yeah. Elizabeth Lawrence is
yes.
the actress. She's wonderful.
Yes. And like everybody in Massachusetts thinks that this woman is a saint and,
mm-hmm.
but the girls have accused her.
Yeah.
And so she's been arrested. And you know, the Proctors are like, you know, how, Reverend Hale, you can't believe this, you know?
Yep.
And then he says, you know, look, This is a strange time, and so I'm here tonight to I would like to figure out the Christian character of this house.
Yep. Yeah.
And so it's time to ask some questions.
Yes, and he asks them to recite their commandments.
Yeah.
And this happened in another scene in the movie, and the person didn't recite any commandments. Yeah. They're like, I don't know.
Right, right.
So he's here, and he's asking them this, and he starts reciting them off, you know, and he knows them, right?
He knows about six of them,
and he gets up there in numbers, and he can't remember. And his wife goes, adultery, John. And it's like, ooh, of course he forgot that one.
And you see Joan Allen just sitting there coiled, listening to him, like, recite the commandments.
Yes.
And he's not saying, thou shalt not commit adultery, and he can't get it. It's on the tip of his tongue. He doesn't know. And she just, adultery, John.
Oh.
And he goes, aye.
You think this is how she got the Oscar nomination? Just that yes. Cold look the whole time sitting at that table.
Oh,
she's like,
man.
Oh, dude, so good.
And when John, kind of collects himself because he knows he's just been burned. Oh, shit, I forgot adultery, the thing I did. He says, oh, well, see there, between the two of us, we know them all. I think it'd be a small fault. And Hale says, theology, mister. Is a fortress. No crack in a fortress could be considered small. And he gets his hat and he's about to leave.
Yeah.
He's all pissed off. And like, he thinks that like John Proctor is a menace because he only knew 9 commandments, and Elizabeth thankfully like is able to talk him some sense into him. Listen, listen, I am a covenanted woman. I have never done anything wrong. And on it, she says something about like, question Abigail Williams about the Gospels, not me.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. She's like, all right, we're going to fight fire with fire.
Exactly.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he says something about like, cause they're still talking about Rebecca Nurse being accused. And he says something about like, remember when an hour before Lucifer fell, God thought him beautiful in heaven. Dude,
yeah.
Look, okay, that's yeah, all right, touche. But you can't honestly believe that this woman is sending her familiar spirit to these girls and like, wouldn't she have like, if she had this kind of power, if any of them had this kind of power, wouldn't we all be dead?
I guess so.
I mean,
unless it's some game we're just playing.
Right, right. Well, so if I have devil powers, I'm just going to terrorize you in your sleep?
These are forces we don't understand, Dave. And we have to abuse them for our own gain. Also where they get Mary to come down, and she has the doll with her, right?
Yes, because Cheever, the law enforcement, they've showed up.
Oh yeah, they all showed up with a wagon and a cart of other witches that they've arrested this evening,
and they're there to arrest Elizabeth or investigate.
Yeah,
you know?
And they find a doll with a needle stuck in the abdomen, and it's a doll that Mary had brought home.
Yes.
Abigail, I think, gave it to her, right?
Well, she's sitting there in the courtroom, like, during the proceeding, and she's sewing it, and, like, you see Abigail look down at it as she puts the needle in.
Yes.
Like, it's full on, she tells the truth about this.
Yeah.
She says that Abigail saw me put the needle in there for safekeeping.
Yes, because Abigail ends up... She shows up with a needle stabbed in her stomach.
Yes.
And in front of everyone. And says that she's been bewitched, And,
right.
And they find that voodoo doll, quote unquote, with the needle in it. And,
yeah.
Joan Allen has committed this crime against her.
Yes. She like was able to, use the doll to stab Abigail.
Oh, yeah.
And it's directly after the confrontation when John Proctor had gone to town to find Abigail, and he tells her to meet her in the clearing in the forest, and that's when they had their other confrontation.
Yeah.
Where she then like got on him at one point, dude, you talk about the chemistry again. She's taken out all her hairpins. And, and she like at one
by
point
that tree.
Yes.
Ah.
She clutches his neck and like starts to like slither down his body. And she has this like ecstatic look on her face and her eyes are closed. And like he's trying to get away and she is just rubbing up again. Like, and like it's a lot.
She is like.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's
going for
it. She's like a slug connected to his body.
Yes, I know.
It's
right. Yeah.
I was like, Daniel Day-Lewis, you want to trade, please? I'll trade with either of them, dude.
That's true. Like, that's true.
That, even that tree, I'll be the tree.
Yeah, exactly.
Just let me stand there.
Yeah, you'd want to be in that sandwich. You're right.
I'll be the bark. No, dude, but yeah, they,
you want to trade.
The chemistry, though. Their chemistry is amazing.
I know. It's pretty much on fire. Yeah. But yeah, it's like, and right after he had told her, because that's when he said the thing about, you know, if you cry witch against my wife, it will be the end of you.
Yes. Right.
And he, that's when she came into the pub with the needle in her abdomen, and she, like, in front of everybody.
Right, you know? Because she's been rejected once again by her man that she's doing all this for.
Yes, yes. It's so twisted.
Everything that happens in this movie is because of a jealous...
It's all sexual repression, dude. Yep. That's all it is. When you, like, deny human beings their feelings, this is what you get.
you get the devil.
Yes.
You get the witch.
You get violence.
Yep.
Like, the most polite cultures are the most repressed, and the most repressed are the most violent.
Oh, dude.
When will we learn?
Never.
No.
We're never going to learn.
Exactly. Exactly. It will never happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
Yes. Someone just, like, take this podcast as a document of, like, you know.
Take this in a time machine
right.
Back to the 17th century and show them.
Yes.
Make them listen.
Oh, my God.
On their iPod shuffles. Right. That was that long ago, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yep.
It feels like it.
Damn. 2008 might as well have been 1692.
Exactly.
You're right.
But they also convinced Mary, like, hey, you've got to tell the truth here in this scene also. Because she's like, well, Abigail did this. I didn't do anything. We didn't do anything. And they're like, you know the truth. You have to tell her. And she has this breakdown, like, I can't, Abigail will kill me.
Yes.
Like,
and she's right.
Yep.
Like, she's one person against this throng that's led by Abigail, the actual devil.
She, like, is crying. She even says, like, she says, they'll turn on me. Like, the whole brood of them, you know, it's going to turn on her.
Yes.
Dude.
Because there's a scene, like, in about 10 minutes from now where they do walk in, like, the brood.
Yeah, they're in those snow suits.
Yes,
yeah.
And they just, like, walk into the room Mary's in, and it's pretty scary, because they don't even say anything. They just stand there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they will turn on her in a second.
Yes.
Yeah. And now Elizabeth has been arrested.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
When they cart her off in that wagon, like, it's a very emotional scene.
Right.
And Daniel Day-Lewis starts fighting everyone. And even, like, Reverend Hale starts to, like, fight people. Like, hey, you can't, don't take her.
Right.
And I don't know exactly what he says, but there's, like, a coda to this scene where he kind of just walks into the frame.
Yes.
And is looking at the moon.
He does a soliloquy.
And he just says something, like, very Shakespearean.
It ends with, and God's icy wind will blow.
Yeah.
It's powerful.
Awesome.
It's
totally just... unnecessary scene that's just added there, and I think it's perfect.
Yeah, it's very theatrical.
Yeah. So I imagine in the stage play, like, that was some big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now we get, like, a huge, like, this is a huge pivotal part of the movie where Judge Danforth is gonna finally, like, we're gonna find out what's going on.
Right.
Because they're getting John Proctor out there, like, Goody Proctor is on trial. Like, everyone's there.
Yes.
And John Proctor shows up with, who's the guy? Giles Corey?
Giles Corey.
Giles.
Yeah. His wife has also been accused, and she was on the wagon with Elizabeth.
Yeah. So they show up and they're like, hey, we need to talk. And they go and talk with the judges. We've got all these signatures for all these good people that will testify that these are honest women. They're not witches. And these are honest men. This is all a lie. All these girls are telling lies. And they're getting the full story now, the judges. Like, they're really hearing everything from every side now. Like, okay, so they're saying this, they're saying that. And now the judges have to kind of pick through all that.
And initially, when they give him the list, the first thing Danforth does is goes over to Cheever and issues arrest warrants for all 91 people.
Yeah.
And he tells the, like, Proctor and Corey, you know, you're either with this court or you're against it. Danforth is a different kind of fascist. You know, like, he's not an idiot, but obviously, but he's also an autocrat, so he won't listen to reason, even from his most trusted colleagues. Mm-hmm. Like Judge Sewell. Like there was a scene before this where Danforth and Sewell were outside just talking about, like, you know, and Sewell is like, you know, isn't it surprising that we're getting all this, you know, from children? You know, mm-hmm. doesn't this seem kind of fucked up to you, is what he's essentially saying.
Yeah.
and like Danforth, like, just essentially tells him, like, you know, well, listen, the Bible told us that this was coming, you know, so we need to be ready for it. And we're the stewards of God. So we need to, you know, like, sit in judgment.
Yeah.
Even when he knows injustice is being done, he won't give in because that would require him to admit that he's wrong. And, I mean, at one point, like, later on, he says, "I shall not rest until every inch of this province belongs again to God."
Oh.
It is chilling.
God, yeah.
You know? That he actually believes that is his work.
Yeah.
You know? And, of course, he's been put in charge, in power to do this.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Yeah. I think he says that to Reverend Hale, actually.
He says it to Sewell.
It's Sewell.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, man. And he's so high on his own power.
Yeah.
That he can't see the truth.
I know.
Oh. Yeah, he probably thinks he's right about everything all the time.
Yes.
You know, he's never wrong. He's never faulted.
Absolutely not.
So they actually continue with some of the trial here, and they start asking the girls a lot of questions, right?
Right.
And because Mary shows up and starts to testify that everyone's lying.
Yeah.
And that it's all a hoax, man. We've made it up.
Yeah.
And they actually start asking good questions. And then they ultimately get to a point where they're like, well, you all fainted. You all pretended to faint. Well, why don't you faint now? Pretend to faint.
Yep.
And she can't do it. And I think it's because of this pressure they put on her to perform. And the fear she has of the other girls, it's all surmounting to this moment, and she can't do it because she's afraid to do it. Like, I could pretend to faint right now if I wanted to, but it might not be convincing. She has to get into that mindset that all this mob was in.
Yeah.
And that makes it easy because you see everyone else doing it.
Her audience was ready to believe her
right
in that moment. And, like, the film does a great job of, like, visualizing what you just described, where you see Karen Graves in the middle of the frame and the camera is spinning around her.
Yeah.
And Reverend Paris and John Proctor and Judge Hawthorne, they're all telling her, go ahead, faint, do it.
Yeah.
You know, and the girls are staring at her too. Like, she's facing pressure from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Warren is already kind of a reticent type, you know, she's
right.
She's not really like someone who's a take charge kind of person.
Oh yeah. You know? The scene when she came home from the town and had to confront Daniel Day-Lewis in the dark, like that was a big step for her.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So yeah, these authority figures who could end her in a second.
Yeah.
She has to try to do this. She just can't do it. It's like people who can't take tests. You know, they know the content, they know the subject matter, but for some reason they can't perform under the pressure of taking a test.
Right.
It's the same situation here. She can't do it.
Absolutely. And it should not be a referendum on that person, you know, just because they can't, like, function in this one, you know, like...
Yeah, in this environment.
Yeah, exactly.
And Abigail sees this as an opportunity to pounce.
Yep.
She starts going off like... Like, oh, I see her spirit. She's doing this. She's up in the rafters. I see the devil. And, like, everyone is like, oh, my God, and looks up at the rafters. Like, all the judges, everyone in fear. And
the girls join right in.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh.
And I mean, like, you know, and they're just saying, and, like, it's Winona Ryder. Like, she is just expertly as Abigail and as just this crazy person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she just... You know,
yeah. There's an amazing camera shot here too. Like when she does that, the camera pulls up in a way up into the rafters, like very quickly. Like
awesome
the spirit has just retreated.
Right.
It's awesome, man.
It's great.
Like
yeah.
A lot of the camera work in this is fantastic. There's flashy stuff like that. Not a ton of it, but then just like every scene looks amazing.
Yeah.
Everything is framed perfectly. Everything looks beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, the shooting of this film is excellent craftsmanship.
It is
wonderful.
It's dynamite. You're right. This is like one of my, I said that the scene with like Hale, Elizabeth and John in their cabin is my favorite scene.
Yeah.
This is like 1A is this whole sequence. Because like when the court is in session and like what eventually kind of crescendos after the Abigail pretends that like Mary Warren is flying around the meeting house
mm-hmm.
is, Abigail gets down on her knees and starts to pray. And that's when John Proctor yells, "Whore."
Yeah.
And he grabs her and says, "How do you call heaven?" And he like slams her head down on the judge's table. Judge Danforth says, "You know, how do you know this? You know, what proof do you have of this?"
Yeah.
And he says, "I have known her, sir."
Mm-hmm.
And like Winona Ryder gets up and does the whole like gasp thing again, but it's like for a different reason.
Yeah.
She can't believe that John Proctor just gave it away again. Like,
yep. He says it twice because the judge is even like, "You've known her."
Yeah.
And then he says it again, just more intense this next time. "I have known her." And he's bursting in tears
yeah.
and anger and frustration while he's revealing this.
He calls her a lump of vanity. yes. And that, you know, like, he says, my wife, my dear good wife, you know, saw her for what she was and put her out on the high road. And but God help me, I lusted.
Yes. Yep. And at one point he yells, like, I think it's near the end. He says, "This is a whore's vengeance now." talking about the whole situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's gotten out of hand.
Right.
I think calling her a whore is a little extreme.
Oh, it's quite so, yeah.
But I guess for the time, that's what you would say?
Because, yeah, she had had relations with someone who wasn't her husband.
And he was married.
Yeah.
And again, we said it's his fault, too.
Yeah, of course.
But I think that's the only way he knows how to say this.
Yeah, a man in 1692, that's how he would frame it, you know? Yeah. And he would also have contempt for her for having had sex, even though it was him. You know, I mean, it was yeah. him that it did, he had it with.
Oh, yeah. You know, you have to be most chaste.
Of course. Exactly. If you want to grow up to be good wife Abigail, mm-hmm. you know. But, yeah, she... And I mean, like, it is a bit cheeky of him to, yeah, to, like, fully put it on her. But, like, he, at least he then throws himself on the mercy of the court and says, you know, do with me what you have to.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And, like, it's weird because, like, this moment, after... Proctor admits what he did, it looks like everything's turning.
It kind of does, yeah.
And there's even a very ominous moment for Abigail when Danforth tells her, "Child, if she tells me it were for harlotry, may God spread his mercy on you." And he's referring to, because they're going to bring Elizabeth in,
yeah.
and they're going to ask her, why did you dismiss Abigail from your service?
Yes.
And yeah, John Proctor said, you know, or Danforth goes, you know, something about like, so you're saying that your wife saw her for a harlot and knew yes. her for a harlot.
Yep.
And, yeah, and
your wife knows this.
Exactly.
And she will corroborate this.
Yes.
And he says, yes, she has never lied.
Right.
She will never tell a lie.
Yes.
And so they bring her in.
Right.
And the framing of this is wonderful because you get the three of them kind of in a row with Winona Ryder and Daniel Day-Lewis on the left and right. And they're in the foreground and Joan Allen is standing between them, kind of behind them. And as they're questioning her and she's going to answer, the camera pushes in towards her and gets real close to her as she answers. And she says, she denies it. She doesn't tell the truth. She lies
yep.
to protect her husband.
And immediately John turns around and goes, "Elizabeth, I confessed."
Yeah. And you then know. Her face is like, "Oh crap."
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And like Danforth immediately puts it in the record right then, you know, like, "Hey, she said no, she denied it." You know,
yep.
everything's back on. The
yep.
girls are telling the truth. And Hale is like, you know, just beside himself.
Yeah. He's he even like tries to stop it. He's like, of course she would lie
yeah,
in this situation. And it's such a small lie.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
who wouldn't?
Yeah. He it's understandable.
Which is basically everything that's happened in the entire movie.
I know.
Everyone's lying
yeah.
for small, petty shit.
And I mean, like, I guess you could, like, objectively, you know, like, if you were Danforth, look at this situation and go, okay, well, you know, what Elizabeth just said, I wish he would just use some logic to there. I mean, like, listen to what Hale is saying and, like,
yeah,
yeah of course she's going to tell that lie.
Right.
You know? She doesn't
we
want
her. We all know how his logic works.
I know.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
We got a big taste of it about 15 minutes ago. You're right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If she floats, she's a witch. That's right. That's what he's thinking.
Yes. Man.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, and like this starts like a whole, it's a weird moment where there's a disturbance. And the girls like flee the meeting house and start running toward the ocean.
Right.
And they're parading through the town, and like all the townspeople start to chase them, as does the delegation and Proctor and all the witnesses. And they eventually end up in this confrontation in the water.
Yeah.
And Mary turns on John Proctor.
Right. Because now she's under the pressure of Abigail and the courts, and she sees her way out is to go back to them.
Yep.
Even though it's the wrong thing.
It is.
So she points to him. He made me sign his book.
Oh my God. With the frickin' signing of the book. I just cannot believe.
And they, God, they asked John, like, what's going on here? And he's like, he can't believe this.
Right.
And he gets overwhelmed. And they ask him what he has to say, and he says, God is dead. I say you are pulling heaven down and raising up a whore. I say God is dead. And he's not saying it to, like, denounce God.
No.
He still believes, you know. He's saying that this whole situation is ridiculous, that you're putting the word of this, quote-unquote, whore ahead of God.
Right.
Yes.
And I mean, like he, earlier in the movie, when Elizabeth was trying to convince him to go to Salem to, like, you know, tell everybody what Abigail had told him, like, there's a moment where, like, Elizabeth walks in, and John is with his two sons, and they're reading Daniel in the Lion's Den.
Yeah.
In the Bible. And so it's him just with his boys, and, like, and there's no one else around, and so they're not, like, showing everybody that they're worshiping. Like, they're kind of worshiping in the best way possible.
Right.
Just in the privacy of their own, you know, home. And, and like, this is just for us. Like you said, he is a believer.
And so now he's arrested because of this. He doesn't even deny what's been accused of him.
Right.
Because he's just done. He's like, this is absolutely ridiculous.
And Danforth, like, before he made the God is dead speech, Danforth said something to him, like, and he accused him. He said, you know, I've seen your power, you know.
What, have you known him? Come on.
He wishes, dude.
He wishes, dude. Talk about repressed sexuality.
Man. Oh, my God.
So you kind of get a montage of people getting hanged and stuff here, too. Like, and the crowds are just screaming and cheering. All the girls are all yelling and screaming and happy that these people are dying now.
It's the first round of hangings. It's really perverse.
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
And this is where Abigail continues to point fingers and stuff, like at Reverend Hale's wife, like I said earlier. And because she doesn't get her way with that, she's upset.
Yes, of course. And she starts to sense that the town is starting to turn against her.
Right.
As does Danforth and Sewell. And because they are, they've had enough of the hangings, and they know that, like, cause it's, I'm pretty sure that it must've leaked probably from, like, the jailer, that, the news about, like, it was confirmed that John and Abigail had been together.
Yes.
And once that got out, everybody, oh, got it.
Yeah. So Abigail steals some money, and she goes to the prison to see John Proctor, and is like, hey, I got money. Let's get on a boat. We can go to Barbados. We can go wherever we want and be together, finally.
Yeah.
And he's basically like, what the fuck are you thinking? I am not going with you.
Yes.
But what he actually says is, it's not on a ship we'll meet again, Abigail, but in hell. Which is basically the best thing you could say to her.
Yes.
Get the fuck away from me.
I know. You're so poisoned.
You still think I want you. After all this,
I kind of treated myself to a vision of the two of them on a boat together.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like a ship, you know, like bound for Barbados in the 1600s.
Yeah.
It was like a cruise ship. You know, and like John Proctor,
like a Royal Caribbean.
Yes, thing? And he's like kind of leaned up against a porthole, like, you know, in cruise wear. You
know? He's got those shades on.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a funny image I got on this viewing when he went during this intense scene.
He's getting another mojito from the tiki bar.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Fred Grandy came out and served him a.
Yes, dude. Oh, man. Isn't it great when those just wild, like, flights of fancy happen? And you're like, wow, okay.
Exactly. And it used to ruin things for me.
Or you can picture Titanic. They're both at the bow.
I know. Like, yeah. Or something. Yeah, you put picture them and you're just, like, in a boat situation. A nautical, a pleasurable nautical situation.
A boat situation.
Yes.
This is a boat situation right here. Right. But, yeah, I love how he tells her off.
Yeah, like, exactly.
And it really punctuates, like, how delusional she's been the entire time.
I know.
Right. Yes. And he says that to her earlier when they're outside the church alone for but a moment.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
He's like, he calls her child and she's like, don't call me child, which I wouldn't want to be called child either if I had sex with this dude.
Absolutely
like, I would not,
not
want to be called child.
You have fucked me, dude. You don't be calling
exactly.
me child.
But seriously, you're half my age.
Oh, yeah.
Leave me alone.
Of course. Of yes. course. Yes, of course. But he can't say that.
I know, right?
He can't. He has no call to say that because he gave in.
Yep.
And you know, dude, honestly, like, this is anybody who wants, because, I mean, there was the whole thing of, like, him also educating her about religious, you know, like, nonsense. Remain a figure of respect for them by not taking advantage of them.
Yes.
You know?
There you go. Yep. So we get like the final scene really is they want him to confess that he's been kind of the ringleader behind all this, isn't it?
Well,
that he dealt with the devil.
They know that everybody they have in the prison right now, including him, Rebecca and Martha and everybody else, that they're all essentially innocent. None of them have actually done anything, but they can't release them just fully and admit that this was all a hoax. They have to have them admit to witchcraft and then they'll be released.
Gotcha. So they all have to admit individually.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
And they pick him because he's like a prominent person in town.
Right.
And Paris tells Danforth, like, if we can get John Proctor to confess, you know, everybody else will confess and this will all be over.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they go, there's a scene at the beach. They bring him there and they bring his wife, who's also still arrested too. And she's pregnant, by the way. She's been pregnant. And they go to the scene or the beach, and this is the scene where I said they reconcile.
Right.
They talk about what's happening, the offer that he's been given, and he confides in her, like, I don't know what to do. Like, should I follow my heart and do what's right, or should I kind of do what they say and hopefully things go back to the way they were? You know, I mean, can I live with that?
Right.
And she tells him, you know, you need to do what's in your heart, and she'll be there with him. And, you know, they're making up for the wrongs that they've done to each other over the years.
Yes,
you know,
of course.
They're more unified now than ever.
And she doesn't try to like accuse herself, but she does like start to kind of, put some of the blame of the infidelity on her demeanor and the way she treated him. And he's just like, oh, listen, no, don't.
Yeah.
Enough,
right.
He says, this was all me, you know. And she says that she thought of herself as plain and, you know, that might have come through, you know, her insecurities about stuff. And, you know, it's a really well acted and powerful scene.
It is. It's written very well, too, because these are the kind of things that grown, mature adults should be talking about and the way they should express things.
Yes.
Instead of yelling or screaming or storming out or whatever.
I mean, there's love behind
blaming.
Every statement. And it shouldn't also take standing in front of the gallows before this happens.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And it's a great job of the makeup, too, because, like, when Joan Allen, like, at one point, like, a wind picks up. I mean, it's, I don't know, you've probably been to the beach in, like, Massachusetts or somewhere in New England. It's cold as hell. And, like, the wind picks up.
In Salem, actually.
Oh, you have? Yes. Yeah. Okay, yes. and, like, it goes through his, like his blouse that he's wearing, and she goes to like tie it at the top, and like her wrists are all like cut up, and it's
yeah,
horrible. You know,
it's gross. Yes. Yeah, you could tell they're filthy.
Yeah,
their
teeth are all rotten and everything. Yeah, it's gross.
They've been in prison.
Yeah,
in shackles. You can tell.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a wonderful scene where they make up, and he decides he's going to confess. He goes up and he's going to sign a confession, and ultimately they want him to sign the paper and write his name, and he starts to write it and he gets it down, and then he doesn't give them the paper though. He's holding it. He's like, you don't need this.
Right.
You don't need to put this up on the bulletin board in town square so everyone knows my name and I was involved in this.
Yes.
Like, it's a lie. Like, I can't do this to my name. And he's like, that's all I am. It's a big speech about how important his name is to him.
He
is.
Yeah, he has the moment where he yells, because it is my name.
Yeah.
Because I'll never have another in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, yeah, because like, and before this happened, like, it was Hale's idea to even like bring in Elizabeth. And he tells Danforth full on, this is a lie. They're innocent.
Yeah.
You know, but he tells Elizabeth, you have to convince John to confess to this lie so that you both can live.
Right.
Because life is God's most precious gift, and no principle, however glorious, may justify the taking of it.
Yeah.
And he's correct. But then in the moment when you're asked to, like, give up your name, to where your reputation and who you are doesn't belong to you anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
tough.
I know it is. It is.
To choose between standing up to your principles.
Yes.
And dying because of that, or, you know, breaking your principles just so you can continue to live.
Yeah.
That's a tough decision because, depending on what it is, I guess, you know, it could be something minor, but this is something extremely important. This is he says it's his name, right? But it's everything he is. It's his faith.
Yes.
It's his relationship with the community and with God. Like, it's all going to be destroyed.
He's a prominent member in the community for these reasons, because, like, people look to him for leadership because he's someone that they can respect.
Right.
And this is all also when they had wheeled out the wagon again, and you see Rebecca and Martha up there, and they're not going to confess.
Right.
And so when he sees them taking this stance, now he really is torn.
Yeah.
You know, because...
And it's because everyone knows they're innocent,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
Everyone does. But the court has to save face, and that's why they're doing this. And they can't let him get away with it.
Right. The West Memphis Three were finally let out in 2011, only when the state of Arkansas got it on the record through this rarely used legal tactic called the Alford plea, in which Damian Eccles, Jason Baldwin, and Jesse Miskelly, in effect, admitted fault for the murders. Even though the state knows they wrongly imprisoned these guys for 18 years, they will never be held accountable, and they can't be sued. Because according to the records, the case is closed and the murderers were these three guys.
Yep.
That's what the official record says.
On paper.
Yes.
That's who they are.
For anyone to say that, like, you know, this play or this film or whatever is not relevant to today, no one says that, thankfully.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it just happened. It literally just happened, like, a little more than 10 years ago.
Yes.
Our current leadership... they're still Danforth.
Yeah.
You know? And they will kill you rather than admit that they were wrong.
Whew.
You know?
Yeah.
Because they almost didn't take the plea. Jason Baldwin almost said, I'm not signing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say that I killed those boys. The only reason he didn't was because Damien was on death row.
So he did it to save a life.
Yes. Which is more than the state of Arkansas did.
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, eventually John, he sees what happened. He sees the other people on the wagon. He sees Danforth. He sees his wife, and he rips the confession in two.
Yeah. Yep. And as he does it, he smiles, this smile of relief.
Yes.
And he's happy with his decision.
And he's crying, too.
He's crying. And he knows what this means for him, and he knows what it means for the message he's sending.
Yes.
And he gets carted away with the other women. And then we see them march up to the gallows, and they say the Lord's Prayer, and in the middle of it, they get pushed off. And the camera ends with just a shot of the rope taut hanging there.
Right.
With silence.
You're thinking that, like, Daniel Day-Lewis's final word is going to be, you know, amen.
Yes.
And it's not.
No, you're cut off right in the middle, dude.
Right.
Mm-mm.
Man. Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, so you don't even get that last prayer in before you die.
Right, exactly.
Before you're murdered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a tough ending, man.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
He stood up for what he thought was right. So you get it's great resolution for the character, but yeah, it's not good for anyone.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is a tough ending, and it's like, of course, it's based on the
yeah.
What really happened, yep. You know?
Yeah. True events.
Yeah.
Making great cinema, Dave.
How about that?
Yeah. Anything else?
Just one thing, a couple things really quick. The best book I've ever read on Salem is called A Delusion of Satan. It's by Frances Hill. Just like Arthur Miller, she uses the real court records of the trials as her source material. And even though it's a work of history and doesn't, dramatize the events, mm-hmm. It still ends up being like far more shocking than the play or the film.
I need to check this out.
Dude, it's... I mean,
love some nonfiction.
Absolutely. And it gets like, you know, into the conditions of the prison too, which it gets really, you know... absolutely.
Yeah, right?
I mean, people were dehumanized, terrible. Some of them were children. And it really is terrible that it happened, you know, like in such... It's pretty recent history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Only 300 years ago. And the other part was that I wanted to mention was that like this is kind of a special project for Daniel Day-Lewis because... he is married to Rebecca Miller, the daughter of Arthur.
Yeah.
So Arthur Miller is his father-in-law, and Rebecca would direct him later in The Ballad of Jack and Rose.
Oh.
So it's this great, like, you know...
That's cool.
He married into, like, an artistic family, and he was, like, a really good addition to it, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dave, would you recommend this movie?
Oh, man, yeah. This is a personal favorite. I love The Crucible. I love the story. I love every, like, I've seen so many different performances of it. I mentioned, like, the audio play, you know, from when I was, that was the first time. I've like, kind of seeked out at libraries every, like, you know, stage performance and stuff. Because I want to see, you know, other people's interpretations of it.
And I can imagine the Foley work and
dude,
stuff.
Yes,
oh, dude,
yes.
I'm there.
It's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally recommend this. This is 5 stars. This is
nice,
an amazing
man.
Film.
Great.
Everyone's got to watch this. This is going to be on that stack of DVDs you just keep watching. I got to watch this over
awesome,
and over
dude.
Again.
That's great.
It's so good. I'll just watch Winona and Day-Lewis together. Like on, I'll loop those scenes.
Yes.
You know, light a little candle. Take it in.
There's a reason you only get like maybe 6 minutes of actual screen time for the two of them. Yeah, because like
the audience can't take it.
No, it's too much.
It's too much. But seek it out, everybody. It's amazing.
Right.
All right. So that wraps things up. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast. Rate it, review it, and most of all, share it. It gets more dudes listening to the dudes. And you can go to dudesonmovies.com and find anything you need right there.
Yep. And we're on Facebook, Blue Sky, and Instagram. Look for Dudes on Movies. And our email address is dudesonmovies@gmail.com.
That's right. And we have a question of the week. Dave, what is the question of the week?
What are your favorite movies about injustice?
That's right. Hit us up. Let us know. And stay tuned. Tune next week when we do 1977 Saturday Night Fever, directed by John Badham and starring John Travolta. So until next week, I'm your dude Scott.
I'm your dude Dave.
And we'll see you next time.